This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And we are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region. And we are also streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. I just want to take a minute or two to just thank a couple of our sponsors. Express Jewelry Center, 44 South Main Street in Concord. You can check them out on the web at expressjewelrynh.com. Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, they're located right in Bedford and Londonderry. You can check them out on the web at integrityfit.com. And Mike, I'm going to throw it over to you to welcome on our next guest.
I am so excited, and you have a chance to see Bob Marley at the Palace Theater Friday, April 24th at 8 o'clock, and then three shows. He's cramming three big shows into Saturday evening at 5, 7, and 9. That's April 25th. Tickets available at the Palace Theater right now as I say hello to my longtime friend, and I don't have to get up at 3 in the morning anymore, Bob Marley. How are you, man?
Mikey!
Yeah, baby!
How are you, buddy?
Well, other than the fact that I've got a rotten cold and I can't hear out of either ear, I'm just fine, thank you.
Oh, man. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Great. Nice to speak with you guys. Thanks for having me today. I think we all have something in common because everybody loves food.
That is for sure.
And I didn't realize that you've spent a little time in the food industry.
Yeah, I worked in a restaurant for years before I did stand-up all through high school. Actually, my first job was at Bonanza Steakhouse. Do you remember Bonanza?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bonanza.
Now, I'm not sure if that's still considered a restaurant, but they had like the, you would walk in, there'd be a giant fence, and they corralled the people down to the ordering station, much like cattle.
Oh,
and they would go out there. Then you would place your order, and they'd yell it over a microphone, which is, I'm not sure that's the top end of high cuisine, but then you grab your tray and slide it down. That was one of the first places where you could actually refill your drink, for free. You'd sit there, and you kept drinking it like, look at this, I'm in control of the drink machine. And then they had different colored Jello. They're like red Jello, green Jello. You're like, I don't know how I'm feeling today. We'll have to see. And so anyway, my job was, I was a dishwasher, and I was okay at it, but the best thing about working there was the uniform, the brown chef hat with the mushroom style hat with the orange polyester rodeo shirt accompanied with the extremely iron pressed brown chocolate khakis. Now, if you were ever looking to date a girl or anything, by all means, invite her to Bonanza, and you would definitely score once she saw those. But I remember walking one night to the salad bar. It was completely packed. Manager Kevin was my boss, and he was never really happy with my performance. But one night I was walking to the salad bar to bring over the plates, and somebody had left a green pepper on the ground, and I had a stack full of plates in my hand and pulled a Charlie Brown on them. Plates went flying, and manager Kevin dressed me up in front of the whole dining room. He's like, you're a loser. You're never going to be anything, Marley. And I was only 14 at the time, but I still have enough substance to stand up for myself. I said, wait a minute now. I'm not the 56-year-old man managing a Bonanza. Somebody has made some serious vocational errors along the way, and it's not the kid standing in front of you. I rode my Schwinn down here, and I'm two shifts away from taking your job. So that was my first job. And then I worked at a great old seafood place up here in Maine called Boone's Restaurant, which was one of the original restaurants here in Maine, right in Portland on the waterfront. Now, of course, Portland is second per capita in the United States behind, I think, San Francisco for the amount of restaurants. There's tons and tons of restaurants.
Yeah, Portland is like a pretty big dining mecca. It really is.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of great restaurants. So I learned how to cook pretty much everything at Boone's Restaurant, primarily seafood stuff, So it was a good skill and a bad skill. Every single holiday or parties my parents had, my mother would be like, Bobby's going to do 100 baked stuffed shrimp and then some stuffed sole with lemon sauce. He's going to do haddock. I'd be cooking nonstop for these people. But so I learned how to cut fish and do all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. And you know, there's so much that goes into food, not just actually eating the food, but the whole process of getting it. My wife, you know, at this point, we've been married so long, she has zero confidence in me. It's not like in the beginning where anything I said or anything I did, she'd be like, Bob, I don't know how you do it, but you are so smart. I don't know how you know the things you know. And I'm like, well, you know, because we turn the clocks back an hour every year. And that alone would simply blow her mind back in the beginning. Now we're at the point where she said this to me the other night, Bob, I'm making dinner. She goes, don't mess this up. Go to Shaw's and get some milk. And I'm like, well, you don't have to preface it by saying, don't mess this up. And she goes, do you want me to take a picture with my phone and send it to your phone? That'd be great. So I could walk around Shaw's with a picture going, do you know where this is? I'm looking for milk. That would be wonderful if you could get this milk. And I don't do well at the grocery. And you guys must shop all the time because you like to cook, right?
Right.
I find that as a comedian, I get distracted in the grocery store. I go and I like to have fun with people, not in a mean way, but there's something for the listeners to give a try. The next time you're in the grocery store and someone's not looking at their cart, as they often will do, they will unattend their cart. I want you to take the largest frozen turkey you can find and place it in their cart. And it's just wonderful when they turn around. It's worth every dot when they look at it and then they stare at their grocery list. I don't see turkey on there. What is that doing in the cart? They're going to take it out and put it anywhere they please. You know how people do that? Like, I didn't put this in here. I'm just going to leave it down here next to the dog food, whatever. And then when they're not looking in their cart, two or three aisles later, I want you to take the same turkey and put it back in the cart. The second time, there's no room for bewilderment because fear has taken over. But you can have fun with food is my point. You know, so I like to cook. You know, my wife says, you cook for show, which, in other words, people come to the house and then I'll actually step up and start cooking. She goes, yeah, when there's somebody looking, that's when you cook to take the credit. You know? but every regular week, you know, you're not cooking breakfast and lunch for the kids and dinner, and just when people show up. And she's basically right, you know. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say you've also talked about working on the baked beans line at was it B&M Beans?
Well, here's what happened. Baked beans in northern New England, as we are, is such a big staple. As when we were kids, I don't think they do it as much anymore. But when we were kids, do you guys remember the baked bean dinners?
Oh, sure.
Like every church had them, and my mother would make them.
Ham and beans.
Yeah, and my mother would also, you know, give fancy names to things. I realize now that we were just very poor, but she'd be like, we're having Welsh rabbit tonight. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to eat rabbit. I didn't know it was saltines with melted government cheese on top of it. But she would give it fancy, like goulash. She's like, it's Hungarian. I'm like, and later you find out that goulash is just everything in the refrigerator mixed with some noodles. Whatever's left there. But so we would have baked beans, and at one point my sister was dating a guy who worked at the baked bean factory up here in Maine, the B&M baked bean factory. And I met the guy, really nice guy, had a lazy eye, a little bit of a traveler, you know. One eye was looking at you and one eye was looking for you. And so he came to the house and I said, what do you do? He goes, I work at the bean factory. I go, what is your job? And he said, I'm a porker. And I go, what is a porker? And he goes, I take a piece of pork and I put it in every can of beans. You know how there's a little piece of pork
right
in every can of beans, like the Cracker Jacks. And he went on to explain to me, because that's what I do. I stand there and I go, pork in the bean, all day long. And he said, sometimes I'll miss a can, the whole belt stops. And Al, the supervisor, comes over. He's like, Al. He's like, someone missed the pork and the bean. You know, if I find out it's you, you're fired. So that was his job. He worked at the bean factory placing little pieces of pork in the can of beans, which is just hilarious to me. And my sister's like, isn't he awesome? I love him. I give you a little exposition as to where she's at in her life, you know.
Exactly.
But the In recent times, the most amount of food I've eaten was on a cruise ship. Have you guys done cruises?
Yes.
I never have, and I'm not interested.
Why?
Okay, well, the food, here's my impersonation of us having dessert the first night on the ship. They come over with a whole tray, and you're like, I think I might try the blueberry cobbler. And he's like, you're welcome to have several desserts if you want. You're like, oh, goodness, who would do that? Certainly not me. Well, two nights later, here's the same situation. I'm going to get the blueberry cobbler, the tiramisu, the cheesecake, the apple pie. You find yourself eating more as the trip goes on. Your stomach expands. And so we went on this cruise ship with the kids, a Disney cruise, and we get on there. And I said to my wife, I was like, you know, I didn't know this, but apparently everybody else brought their kids too. I said, I'm going to have to start drinking. And she said, we haven't even got to the room yet. I said, I know, but I'm not going to make it. I can't deal with all these kids. I was spoken to twice by the captain of the ship just because occasionally during the cruise, I would put my life jacket on and run around screaming. People scramble when you do that. So, also, coming back into America, you go through customs, and they're very strict because they don't want you bringing in any kind of food or plantation or fruits or vegetables. And they ask you three questions to get back into America. I made it through two of the three questions, and then I was brought to the special room for additional questioning. But here's the first question. He goes, you bringing back any plants to the United States? And I was nervous because he had a badge, and I'm like, plants? I don't have any plants. Why would I have plants? I definitely don't have any marijuana plants in there. And my wife goes, what an idiot. I'm like, I don't even smoke marijuana, but I'm just was nervous. I was thinking, I don't know, maybe there is some in there. Maybe I'm like Jason Bourne. I don't know who I am. So they have an island, you know, now, Castaway Key. Disney owns an island. And we get down on the bottom of the gangplank finally to get off the ship. There's like 5,000 people. It took like 4 hours to get off the ship. And there's a woman dressed up like the princess from the Frozen movie at the end of the gangplank. And she goes, do you want to build a snowman? Oh, I'm like, not really. We're from Maine. We spent $6,000 so we could sit on the beach over there. So if you would just step aside, that's what we're going to do. Do I want to build a snowman? Yeah, do you have any cars I can push out of the snow while I'm at it? Maybe do some shoveling for 9 or 10 hours until my second and third vertebrae snap and I can tie my shoes without bending over?
Oh, my God.
I don't know how it's looking down there in Manchester, but spring has definitely sprung up here in Maine. Today was, this morning was 12 degrees. It was balmy and just beautiful. And my favorite part about spring, guys, the roads here in New England.
Oh, boy.
I don't know who's in charge of the roads, but they are doing a bang-up job. Really superb. Especially the guy that puts the little orange bump sign next to the side of the road.
Yeah.
He is a sorcerer in spatial depth and proximity. Because I saw the sign out of my peripheral, and the next thing you know, I was pulling my bicuspids out of the sun visor.
Oh, my God.
I was like, bump, how about hold on or brace yourself? Bump just makes it sound. I saw the sign, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to pull over now and get my exhaust off the road.
Yeah, right.
It's unbelievable. Oh, my gosh, it was such a And we just had Maine Maple Sunday up here, which is consisted of nothing because there's no maple running because it's too cold. And even in southern Maine, in Biddeford, I don't know if you've ever been to Biddeford,
oh,
Maine,
yeah.
But you could probably save your money on that trip. You know how you know it's Maple Sunday in Biddeford because they have the buckets hanging on the telephone poles down that way.
Carol was going to ask you about a donut place. She wondered if you ever heard of.
Yes.
Yeah, have you ever heard of Congdon's Donuts in Wells?
Yes, I've been to Congdon's, and let me tell you something. Yeah, once you're in trouble if you go in there.
I know,
because
believe
they're
me.
So good.
They are
and,
ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, we have a little place down there in Wells, my wife and I and the kids, and we said, hey, let's try this place. Well, now we've tried it like 65 times.
Yeah.
We got
Juries.
In there, and the donuts. Oh, my gosh. They're unbelievable.
They are. They're amazing.
It's something about a good donut. It has to have the right crunch to it, the right crisp, and they got the formula down.
They do.
And, oh, we love that place. That place is so good. And it's you know, it's privately owned by a family, and, you know, that's nice. Because a lot of times you go to these chain restaurants, and, you know, I find that there's nobody really invested in the place as much as they are when they're privately owned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we went to one the other night, and I like it. It's fine. It's called Longhorn Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like to take the bride out and treat her right on Valentine's. So we walked in, and, you know, there's that little podium there where they like to try to wrangle you into a seat. And we just walked by because we didn't see anybody there. And the lady came out of nowhere. She goes, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Oh, we're going to go find a seat." She goes, "Well, you need to wait to be seated." And I'm like, "Okay." The dining room was pretty much wide open. And she goes, "Please go sit at the bar." And I'm like, "Oh, so we're in timeout now because we tried to walk by you?" So she gave us this little coaster. You ever seen these little coasters?
Yes.
When you're waiting for a table? I didn't know it vibrated. I put it in my pocket. And 10 minutes later, she's like, "Are you ready?" I'm like, "Almost."
Oh, my God.
We went to Longhorn. It was good. The waiter, you know, with the questions, he came over and he said, "We got a drink. I got Diet Coke. My wife got a Sprite." And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but sometimes they'll put identifying fruit into the Diet Coke so they know that it's diet. You ever seen this?
Oh, yeah.
I order a Diet Coke, and he comes over with a giant hunk of lemon in it. And I'm like, "What is this?" And he goes, "That's your Diet Coke." I go, no, specifically, the lemon. What's that about?" And he goes, "That's because it's diet. That's my system." I said, "Well, I know, but my wife ordered a Sprite, so your system doesn't really apply in this situation. I prefer it if you stop putting giant hunks of fruit into my drink because you can't remember which one's which. Maybe you should stop doing what you're doing at home recreationally. I don't know what you're involved with." But, you know, that's just what happens. And here's one of my other pet peeves with the restaurant people. Now, listen, if you're going to a restaurant with other couples, and I prefer that you go online first, review the menu, because a lot of restaurants have all the menus online, right? Mm-hmm. You could go on now and look at the menu and decide kind of what you want. You know, because you always get one person holding everybody up. You know, one person that goes, "Why don't you go first?" And then I'm like, "You what? I know that I want halibut, and in the time that I'm going to say halibut, you're going to magically figure out your whole order." No, I'm going to say halibut, and you're going to be like, "I don't know." Because I hate it when you send the waiter away. "Do you need a minute?" Yes, give us a minute. It's never a minute. They're always gone for another 12 or 14 minutes. Or you're starving to death, you know. But here's the thing. If you go to somebody's house, if you're the host, okay, because we just went over for Easter dinner. How was your Easter?
Oh, it was great.
I thought he was in a skit. I'm sorry.
No. We just went over to my aunt's house for Easter, and she said, this is what she said. "Listen, we're going to have dinner at 2. Okay, if you're going to have dinner at 2, promise us that you're going to have dinner at 2.
Oh,
don't get
right
there at 2, and at 4:30, you're huddled in the corner with the other survivors.
It's so
licking
true.
The bottom of a peanut bowl going, "Have you heard anything about food? Are they bringing us to a different room at some point? What will be happening? Serve it up." It's crazy.
That's so true.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being down in Manchester in a couple weeks at the Palace Theater. And, Mike, you've come over a bunch of times to the shows, and it's just a blast. It's a great venue. And, you know, people come and get some laughs. It's going to be Friday and Saturday, April 24th and 25th over there. And, you know, people go, and there's a lot of great restaurants in Manchester, too.
There definitely is. Manchester's becoming almost a dining mecca as well. So
it
yes.
really is. Like, New England is really, really taking the bull by the horns, you know, because I remember growing up here and, like, there was hardly any place to eat other than, you know, chain places and stuff like that or family members' house. And New England people are, you know, it's always the same stuff. When we went to my aunt's the other day for Easter, she had the New England-style platter out there, the appetizing platter with the tinfoil on it. One side is the wheat thins. The other side is the Triscuits. And in the middle is the Cracker Barrel cheese. Uh-oh. It is always that one relative, Cracker Barrel. Oh, boy. Somebody must have had a good year.
Oh, my gosh.
You ain't hurting, are you, Bob?
Oh,
I like my
man.
Nana, how she eats the crackers. Old people will eat something and they go, "Oh, my goodness. I might have another cracker. I'm like, well, go ahead and have a whole bunch, Nana. Nobody's going to call you out on it. My wife likes the Cheez-Its. That's her downfall. Everybody has some kind of food downfall. She came in the other night with her sweatpants on and her hair in a ponytail, so I'm like, obviously something's going to happen here. She's got the biggest box of Cheez-It that Cheez-It has ever made. You know, it's like, it's not even family size. It looked like a city-sized box or made for a town. So she, basically what's going to happen here is she's going to sit down, she's going to eat the whole box of Cheez-It, and then she's going to act surprised that this just happened. And my job as the husband is to also act surprised. That's how you stay married.
Mm-hmm. You're
right. Like, here's the conversation. I can't believe I just ate that whole box of Cheez-Its. To which I respond, well, how can you not, really? I mean, once you get started, how could you possibly stop? And I don't know where you're putting it because you got a great figure. I'll tell you that much. Right? You would never say what you're thinking. I can't believe I ate that whole box of Cheez-Its. You got to be kidding me. You eat a whole box every Tuesday night. This one caught you off guard? So sure enough, I look over. She's elbow deep into these babies, pile driving them down her Cheez-It chute. And she puts me in charge of her intake. She's like, oh, take these away from me. You ever get that with regarding food where people are like, take this away from me? I'm like, that's probably not going to happen. After that is always a threat. If you don't take these away from me, I'm going to eat the whole box. Well, I really don't care. I don't care if you eat 100 boxes, you weigh 1,000 pounds, and they have to saw you out of the house while Richard Simmons is crying on our front lawn. I'm not declining my recliner and going over there with my snuggly on, wrestling a box of Cheez-Its out of your pod.
Oh, Bob Marley, four shows, one on Friday, three on Saturday. The 24th is Friday, 8 o'clock, 5, 7, and 9 on Saturday. Do you ever see people stay through all three shows, Bob?
No, you know what? I haven't, but I've seen, when I used to work in Vegas with Wynonna Judd, I mean, talk about food. We're going out there, and I know you like to go to Vegas, Mike.
Oh, yes.
We're going out next week for school vacation with the kids, and we're going to take them out water skiing at Lake Mead and all this stuff, and the food is great. But anyway, when I was there with Wynonna Judd, she would have people come to every single show. So, and I was relatively, you know, new at it, so I'd have like 20 or 30 minutes that was super clean because she's a pretty religious lady. So you'd have to work really clean in front of her. And people would they'd come Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and I'd have the same 20 minutes, and they're staring at me like paint drying. I heard it Friday. I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I can't prepare a whole set that's going to be sparkling clean on a Saturday, getting it ready for Caesar's Palace in one day. Maybe you should follow another country singer, perhaps.
Tickets available right now at the Palace Theater. Again, that's April 24th and 25th. Spending a good 25 minutes with us, which we could never really do straight through on the old station. Plus, I don't have to get up early anymore. So we hope to have you from time to time when you're in town, either in the studio. We have this beautiful studio that Carol's brother built for her in the Beacon Building on Elm Street, about three blocks from where I used to work. And it looks like a kitchen. It's got all these cookbooks and mixers.
Super cool.
Yeah, it really is fun. A daily two-hour talk show on food. And we were hoping to have Jimmy Dunn, another good friend of yours, on Thursday. He's got strep throat, so we're going to have to connect with him probably next week.
Well, I know that Jimmy, I don't know how much he cooks, but I know from personally just hanging around with him when we lived in Los Angeles together, he and I would basically go to lunch almost every single day out in Pasadena, and we would he'd get on his skateboard, ride down there, and we would eat, and I know he still loves to eat.
He does, and he still loves to surf, and the McCarthys, I'm sure you saw a few episodes, so we hope it comes back in the fall.
Oh, it's a great show, and he's awesome. He's hilariously funny, and I can't thank you guys for having me on today. It's really just a lot of fun. Thanks. Great to hear your voice, buddy.
Thank you very much, Bob. It was such a pleasure to chat with you once again. It's been 10 months. It won't be that long for our next visit, and I'm going to catch one of your shows here in a couple weekends at the Palace. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Take care, buddy.
All right, you're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break, and when we come back, we are going to be back with Make-A-Wish New Hampshire, so stay tuned.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. You're listening to 107.7 WTPL in the Manchester and Lakes region, as well as streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And I was getting nervous, Mike, with that last segment. I was afraid you were going to, like, lose a lung or something.
I can't help it. When you see Bob Marley, and that's why I encourage people to see him in person, because he gestures very comedically, the faces that he makes, and he talks a lot about his family, his mom, his wife, his kids, his late father. And he, you know, he talked about not repeating any, or about repeating the same routines when he played for, was it Ashley Judd or Winona Judd. But he, when he comes and does shows that are like an hour and a half in Manchester, he does not repeat what he did maybe 6 months before. A lot of comedians kind of use the same material. His is all brand new, or you haven't heard it for years.
You know, that's like a gift, because I don't know how they come up with their skits like that. I mean, that, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it's, he just take notes. He has like a spiral-bound notebook like you had in school with all tiny writing on all these pages when he gets an idea. And then somehow he's able to stitch it all together and make a cohesive comedy evening. And he is one of the best. I've known him for over 20 years and highly recommend it. So.
Well, I've never met him. So as you know, he was talking and you were laughing. Oh my God. Well, I was too. I mean, he's very funny. I kept looking at his picture that I printed off just so I could kind of picture him. You know?
Exactly.
But yeah. Well, let's welcome on our next guest. We are in studio with Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. Their office is located right here at the Beacon Building, right at 814 Elm Street. And we are in studio with Valerie, who's the office manager. And Denise, who is, she is like the director of wish granting. Like you said, the fairy godmother, that's what I think. I just think of a wand whenever I hear.
Oh, I have a wand.
Do you have a wand?
Of course I do.
Well, you better.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
I have lots of wishes to grant, so we're very busy upstairs.
How long have you been with Make-A-Wish?
I've been with Make-A-Wish. It'll be 13 years this October.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been director of wish granting?
I have been director of wish granting, I want to say probably 2 years.
Okay.
2 years, so. Yeah, so it's very exciting upstairs.
I've always said that, you know, every week, each segment, you know, we hear about, you know, from different perspectives, too, from like, you know, the kids that actually get the wish, from the sibling, the grandmother, mm-hmm. you know, and then you know, the you employees like in the office and stuff. What is it like being like, what do you do as director of wish granting? I mean, besides the obvious.
Well, I help the wishes come to life. We wouldn't be able to do any of this without all our volunteers. We have, I don't even know, like 200 to 300 plus volunteers that help us out with the wishes and help the wishes. I don't know, just some of the wishes are just so amazing. It's so hard to describe, you know. So I started off as a part-timer working as a admin, really, a.k.a. they called it a secretary way back when, and just worked my way up. And I love it. I wouldn't leave for anything. So it's fabulous.
So all these things do require money. You have to have fundraisers and such. But do you find occasionally that some of the people that provide the wishes actually will make the donation or at least give you a break so it doesn't cost quite as much?
We have a lot of wonderful donors in the state of New Hampshire. I'm originally from Massachusetts. And so when we first came to New Hampshire is so friendly and they're so giving. And we have so many donors that want to help these children and help give to these children. And, you know, to give for a wish for a child with a life-threatening medical condition, I mean, that's an amazing gift in itself, you know.
What happens when you get a request that you just know you can't fulfill? How do you, I guess, try to make the child feel good about what the other choices might be? Like, let's say a kid, well, I want to go to the moon. Well, that's not going to happen. But there's probably ways to kind of make that sort of an experience where they feel like they did.
Yeah, you know what we do, I don't recall ever not being able to grant the first wish that the child chose. And we try to step right out of the box.
Yeah.
If we can't get the moon, we definitely get the stars. So we definitely try to get
that's a great answer.
You know, as much as we can for that child mm-hmm. and their ultimate heartfelt wish. So we do our best. That's all we can do.
Well, tell me about perhaps one or two that
out-of-the-box wishes.
Yeah, out-of-the-box wishes that, that you just don't get many requests for that was really fun to provide. We know the theme parks are very popular for, you know, understandable reasons.
Yes. But, the theme parks are most popular. We did have one child that wanted to have a park of her own and was able to go to one of the parks here in New Hampshire and had it all to herself. And with that donor we had, the owner of Canopy Lake,
It
was fabulous.
The Ulaiki family is very, very good.
Oh, yeah, and they were fabulous. This wish child was able to bring 50 of her friends and family, open the park for herself, ride on any ride she wanted to ride, and it was her day. So to me, that's special, and how New Hampshire came together and how, you know, they just let her have everything, and it was just really fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
So, Valerie, you as office manager, how long have you been up to working at Make-A-Wish?
I was hired in January, so I'm a newbie. But I've been volunteering for 8 or 9 years now as a wish granter and whatever they could talk me into doing. So I've been on both sides, and I really appreciate what Denise does because... As a wish granter, you don't always see all the little pieces that go into having the wish fulfilled. Being on this side of it, I'm seeing a little more of that, and I have a whole new respect for what she does.
So explain that a little bit. What do you really mean by that?
Like, we focus on the magic, but the reality is that the magic always has that background called reality. You know, so there's the data, the reaching out and finding the donations and or making the arrangements, you know, the travel arrangements or the meet and greet arrangements or the whatever, and communicating with the wish granters and the families and the folks who are providing information to us and everything, and it just... It's amazing. You can start the day with one thing, and at the end of the day, that's the one thing you haven't done because you've been taking the phone calls and the emails and the, you know, whatever else there is going on. So it's, I like the wish granting piece because I get to be the magic. They're always happy to see the wish granter. But now seeing the other side of it, I just really have an appreciation for what the organization does.
It seems just... Over the last couple of weeks, speaking to the women last week and then you, that you've all kind of done a lot of different jobs within the organization. So you have a real appreciation, as you just said, Valerie, for how the soup is made.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the wish granting side of it, which is what, you know, the public tends to see. And then, of course, we can't do that if we don't have the development side of things. So, you know, you've got that group working. But when it all comes down to it, when something comes up that needs to be done, you know, there are no egos there. It's all...
No, it's all hands-on. And
Yeah.
We pick up right... Wherever is needed, we are there.
It's the kids. That's what it's about.
Yeah, right. You are listening to Food for Thought. We are live at the Beacon Building. We're at 814 Elm Street. We are in the studio with Denise and Valerie, who work upstairs at Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. And we need to go on a short break, and we'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, which is also the home of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire, right upstairs on the third floor, right?
Third floor, yes.
I know it's third floor because usually when I go up, I won't take the elevator. I'll climb it. So I do remember.
The new Carol. That's good.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That is very true. The new Carol. The old one definitely would have taken the elevator. Oh, gosh. But so we're talking about different wishes, and from what I understand, there are different wishes. So can we kind of go into that just a little bit?
Well, wishes generally fall into four different basic categories. I wish to go, which is pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. I wish to have, so it may be we have electronics, wishes, or one young man wanted a dune buggy. We have I Wish to Be. In this instance, a good example would be Rosie. She wanted to be a movie director, and we created a movie with her. And then I Wish to Meet, and those are celebrity wishes usually. Taylor got to meet Gronkowski last fall?
Yes, last fall. Last October, I do believe it was.
So those tend to be longer to make happen, just because, you know, you've got to interact with different levels of folks to get them involved. But it works.
Yeah, I can speak to the Rosie, I want to be a movie director, wish that was granted, as I've been somewhat involved with the Garvey family for their cystic fibrosis efforts. So this young girl, who at the time was probably, what, maybe 9 or 10?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reached out to Make-A-Wish New Hampshire and wanted to basically make a little video of her life. So she did just that, and I don't know what people you put into place. I think actually some people I know were involved in it. Aaron Hatton, I think, may have been one of the people involved from Channel 50. And then, okay, so that was the first part. The second part then was to hold a red carpet premiere.
Wow.
and a big celebrity walk the red carpet thing, and we did that at the Art Institute right here in downtown Manchester. So you had people showing up in nice clothes, and they were passing hors d'oeuvres and with the roving camera. And then when everybody was all set, we sat down and we watched Rosie's life story, such as it was up to that point, showing that out of the box, you can do almost anything. She wanted to make a movie. Okay, we can do this. And that's what you do so very well at Make-A-Wish.
That's our goal. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to encourage the kiddos to think about it and really get down to that heartfelt wish, the one that really changes everything. You know, it's easy to say, oh, wouldn't it be great if I went to, you know, Hawaii or whatever? Why do you want to go? Oh, I don't know. Okay, that's not it. You know, it's the wish that they just can't stop talking about. That's the one
you
want.
So were you actually, as you just said, discuss it with them, kind of steer them somewhere else?
We don't steer them. What we do is, as wish granters, you sit down with the child and just start asking questions. And when an idea comes up, you know, what is it that you're hearing? What are you seeing? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you hoping for out of this? And it may be that they've got that all figured out. And it may be, you know, why don't we come back in a week or two and see if you know, once you've had a chance to think about this, this is really what you want to do. So this is a once in a lifetime. So we want to make sure we get it right the first time.
Sure.
Now, when you do go with that child, how many have you been on? Like, do they mostly know what they want right away? Or do you still have to kind of pull?
Some do. My husband and I granted a wish to a young man. He was three. And we figured, you know, it would be a theme park wish. That's pretty standard for that age.
Right, right.
And so we chatted with him, and he said one word. I think it's one word, and that was iPad. And we said, really? Well, what about iPad? And that's all he wanted. And honestly, we did get him an iPad. That was when the iPad was first coming out. And let me tell you, that was not easy, but we got one. And he was using it within 3 seconds of having gotten it out of the box. He had used it during his treatments, and that was something that gave him some freedom and whatever. So that's what we went with. So sometimes they do, and sometimes they need time, and that's okay too.
Right. I can't believe 3 years old he wanted that.
And a chocolate bar.
And a chocolate bar.
So we found a 5-pound Hershey bar to give him.
Of course you did. Do you get videos of a lot of the wish fulfillment moments, maybe the big reveal or parts of the whatever excursion it may be?
We get mostly photos. We ask if we could get some photos so we could see the smiles on the children's faces and see what they're experiencing. And so the families are fabulous to send us wish photos to see exactly how their wish was. And the photos are amazing.
Yeah, that must be. It must be good, you know, as the wish granters, being able to see, you know, see that look on the child's eye, you know, when that happens.
There's nothing like it.
What?
There's nothing like
right.
it.
Right, yeah. I bet. Now, I know you have an event coming up, so let's just chat a little bit about that before we lose some time.
Well, our big event this coming May is our Breakfast for Wishes. And you can find more information on the website. But it is our big fundraiser, really.
Yeah, it's our seventh. It's the seventh, I do believe, annual.
And we have wonderful volunteers who do fundraising for us all year long. But this is one of the two that Make-A-Wish actually does, I think.
Yep, we have that one. And then in the summertime, we do a Rafting for Wishes, which is on Lake Winnipesaukee. That is the first Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of August.
Jason and Jason.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're trying to do this year, we've got some teams that are fabulous to come together to work together. I know there's a Target team, there's some police stations and some fire stations in the state of New Hampshire that are willing to help with these kids and stay on these rafts for
44 hours.
So. Well, listeners, if you want more information on Make-A-Wish, you can check them out at nh.wish.org. And they're, like I said, they're located right here in Manchester at 814 Elm Street. And thank you very much, Denise and Valerie, for coming on and letting us learn a little bit more about Make-A-Wish. And up next is Kale and Company, and Ken Kale is in the house, Mike, today. So he's here in the green room getting ready. So we'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.